Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished and a multifaceted professional from the Indian Navy and has done lots of other things from India, Commander Deepak Adhar. Deepak, welcome to the show.
Good morning, sir, and thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Commander Deepak Adhar is the founder of Perspectives Consulting. He's an L&D facilitation expert, an executive coach. He's a theater and film actor. He's a TV commercial model, and he's a veteran Navy pilot. So Deepak, before we get into anything else, tell me about your own incredible journey from the Navy to the corporate world to the stage and screen.
So, sir, I'll start with where I ended up getting born, destiny, which was I was born in a fourth generation military family.
Amazing.
So my great-grandfather was a First World War veteran. My grandfather fought in the Second World War and got a military cross. My father was in the army. So when I was born, I was totally surrounded by the army, and that's all I knew, actually, because we stayed in cantonments, so our neighbors also were all army. Yeah. The friends I had, their parents were in the army. The hospital I was born, the doctor was from the army, the nurses, the school bus we went in, the driver was from the army, the conductor. So that's all. From the world, I thought was all the army. And at age 10, then my parents picked me up and put me in a boarding school called RIMC. Just a little about that school. It is about 102 years old, and it takes one child per state after a competitive written exam and interview and medical. And primarily it grooms them for joining the armed forces. And it has one of the highest percentage of generals, admirals, and air marshals, and that too in three countries, India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh.
Wow.
So, which is something that not many schools in this world can boast of. So that's where I ended up, and it was, predestined that I was going to, be joining the army. And from there, I went on to join the National Defense Academy. And that's where I started my first deviation, wherein I said, let me join the Navy. That was a big departure from, and the biggest kind of rebellion that I could have done, earning myself the adage of being the black sheep of the family who wore white.
Or the white sheep of the family, yes.
Yeah. So I joined the Navy thereafter, and I served on some frigates and destroyer, and I was the ADC to the fleet commander. And that's the time when I volunteered for flying. And then I went to the Indian Air Force for training for flying. And then I had a career which alternated between sea duty and flying, went on to command an air squadron commandership. And then finally, at about 20 years plus, I decided to call it a day, hang up my boots, and I went to XLRI Jamshedpur, where I did my management and transition. And then I moved into the corporate. And I was there for about a decade, where I started off as a consultant, HR consulting firm. Then I ended up as a practitioner heading HR. And that's when, after about a decade, I decided to transit to the learning and development. And I joined this organization called Pegasus Academy and Consulting, which primarily was in the outbound learning space. And we used to do, so I was partner with them, looking after the North India business. And so with them for a couple of years. And that's when then COVID happened. And then I started off with my own enterprise, which gave me a little more time to do theater. And then soon theater took center stage. And from there, then I got a film. And from the film, then I got an ad. So here I am.
And as I say, the rest is history. Wonderful. So for my viewers and listeners, tell me one or two films that you have acted in, just for them to put a name to the face.
Yeah. So I acted in a Bollywood film, which was released in PVR and right now streaming on OTT on Jio Cinema. It is called Simla, A Winter Tale.
Okay.
And in fact, one of my fellow actors, Rituraj Singh, just passed away about a fortnight ago.
Yeah, I read about that.
So that was the film I did. I'm shooting for another film on the 26th of this month, which is a debut film by a young filmmaker who's just come back from New York. And so that's the film. An ad I did for Kohinoor Rice. So it was a 1 minute TV commercial ad.
Wonderful. So you also, Deepak, you know, spent time in the Indian peacekeeping force in Sri Lanka. How did your experience in the IPKF impact you personally and professionally?
So as luck would have it, this Indian peacekeeping force went in just when I joined the Navy as a young officer. So my indoctrination actually happened you know, in the process. So I went straight into the deep end, as they would call it. And I got an opportunity to fly there also. Also, I visited the port on board a warship also. And but one very profound thing that happened was that when I patrolled those very areas with, you know, armed patrol of my aircraft, and the maps that I used as a young lieutenant, you know, flying one of my first missions, you know, 20 years later, when I was commanding the squadron, I flew using the same maps over the same area, but this time it was for disaster relief because of the tsunami that was there. So it was a very profound moment that the same person, the same aircraft, the same map, but instead of carrying weapons, this time I was carrying humanitarian relief. Amazing. So full circle.
Amazing. You also, when I was reading about you and preparing for my conversation with you, you also speak about a particularly challenging mission you undertook with the Flying Fish Squadron. I don't know if you are at liberty to speak about it, but if you're not, we can move to another question.
So, very honestly, I think flying inherently is a challenging business, and military flying is a little more challenging. Okay. And flying over the sea becomes, you know, it takes it to the next level. And one had many challenging missions. So rather than getting into those confidential ones kind of a thing, I can talk about a very routine one, which was reasonably challenging. So I was ferrying an aircraft, an Islander aircraft, from Port Blair to mainland for servicing. And the fuel which the aircraft normally carries is insufficient for it to be able to do the journey. So as a result, we have to carry additional fuel in our underwing tanks. And you have a pump which you switch on when the, you know, fuel has been consumed midway, so that the fuel gets pumped from the underwing tanks into the aircraft. And when we reached midway and we tried to switch on the pumps wouldn't switch on. So now... we didn't have enough fuel to go back. We didn't have enough fuel to reach the other side. And there was supposed to be a Coast Guard vessel, which was supposed to be there at that point, because just in case, you know, we had to have any emergency, which was the case, it was supposed to pick us up from the water after we ditched. And as luck would have it, that ship also had some problem in its engine and it turned back and went back to Vizag. So here we were in the middle of the ocean, running out of fuel, can't go back, can't go ahead, and there was nobody to pick us up. So it was a pretty challenging this thing, and there was not much that we could do, you know. There's I mean, I can't go and repair the pump or do anything. I mean, you can just switch it on, switch it off, and that's all. So I guess the next best thing was to pray. And so my co-pilot, who was actually senior to me and was my instructor, so he said, why don't you try to switch on the pump? So I said, you are my instructor. It's, you know, there, and it's just a pump which has to be switched on. You know, just flick the switch. So you are doing it. So he says, just do it. I mean, what else can we do? And as luck would have it, I switched it on. And the moment I switched it on, you know, the light came on, the pump was working, and I'm here to tell the story. So it was quite a thing. But yeah, I mean, one had, for those moments, till it switched on, you know, it was quite a traumatic experience.
Fascinating. Deepak, after your Navy, when you left the Navy, you moved into human resource management and strategic marketing. My question is, how did your military experience influence your approach to human resources?
So When I was in the Navy, one of the things which used to fascinate me the most used to be that in the fleet, there were so many ships, but some ship stood out compared to the others when it came to its performance. And it didn't necessarily need to have the latest weapons or the latest equipment or whatever it is. It was always the men behind the machine who made the difference.
Right.
So, you know, the same thing happens, you know, in the corporate also, that there are some companies who, you know, outperform the others with all other things being same. I mean, the product can be similar. And so, you know, what is the difference which is, you know, makes that difference? So I feel that usually in the corporate, people tend to be a little transactional when it comes to, I mean, there is a contract with the employee is supposed to deliver something and the organization, you know, kind of pays for it. And it's a very contractual relationship. And similarly, even sales and things like that, there are incentives and, you know, everything is linked to, you know, just money. And, you know, when they do that, they feel they have done their bit kind of.
Right.
Whereas I believe that motivation plays a very important role wherein people feel proud to be part of that organization. And therefore, they, you know, go that extra mile and give their best. And that is what, you know, differentiates and what I call is competitive advantage, because that is something that cannot easily be replicated. You know, so you can buy a similar machine, which is manufacturing, you know, you can make the product as good, but, you know, that competitive advantage, which an organization can have is, you know, very difficult to, so that is what I tried to bring in wherever I was. And even as a consultant, I tried to help organizations with that, to have this shift of, you know, wanting to make the people motivated and deliver beyond there.
Well said. Great response. Thank you. Can you also share with us an experience where your military background or your Navy background proved to be an advantage for the corporate sector?
So I think one of the things that in the armed forces you tend to learn is adaptability. And, you know, that's because today you are fighting in the desert, tomorrow it could be in the jungle, day after it could be on the mountains, you know, you don't know. And similarly, as far as I was concerned, you know, sometimes I was serving in an air squadron flying aeroplanes, sometimes I was on a ship. And there also you had multiple duties. Sometimes you were handling the mess secretary, sometimes you were the canteen in charge, sometimes. So you did all those things that you were not trained for, but you kind of quickly learned on the job and you delivered. Now, in the corporate, what I found is that a lot of people were very stuck with their job description and they, you know, confined themselves to that rather than stretching out and doing that. So that was something that, you know, I felt helped me because I was always willing to learn, you know, not saying that it's not my job kind of a thing, and learn on the job and have a steep learning curve. And I guess that's what had been helped me to quickly adjust. And
well said, well said, well said. And then, you know, after being in the corporate world, you decided to step off the corporate ladder and pursue a career in outbound learning and theater. What were the motivations to move out of the corporate world?
So, actually, it was a pretty 9-to-5 kind of a job, 6 days a week, you know, and I had already been there, done that. I was heading HR. I had done a merger and acquisition. I had done a demerger and listing of a company. So, you know, it has started becoming pretty routine and transactional. And I wanted to actually, I was very fond of actually the learning and development space. And in fact, I even attempted a PhD because I was hoping that I could probably go on to a B school, but you know, the rigor of it was, you know, something. And plus, I think academia per se didn't kind of appeal to me. That's where I'd met Dr. Payal Kumar also. So I found that the L&D space and the OBL space was the best because it talked about soft skills, which were very dear to me. And it spoke about experiential learning. It spoke about learning in the outbound, doing activities by reflection rather than theory and, you know, chalk and board and PowerPoint presentations. So that had me very excited. And while as head of HR, in fact, when I was leaving my organization, so my managing director told me also that, you know, why are you going? I said, I want to, you know, do learning and development. So he said, you can do it within the organization. So I said, but I'm heading HR. There are so many other things to do that I do not have the time and the bandwidth to be able to dedicate it to that. So I want to do something which is just that rather than. So that's how I stepped. Also, the sphere of influence when you are within an organization and you are doing that is only limited to that. But when you are in an L&D organization, then you've got clients from all over with whom you are dealing. So your sphere of influence becomes that much larger. And so you get insights from multiple sectors. You learn in the process. So I guess that was what got me into the OBL space. Insofar as theater was concerned, it was more by accident. I wanted my kids to do theater, and that because I felt that it was important in developing their personality in terms of confidence on facing an audience, power of expression, empathy, you know, all those kind of things. But for me, it was an opportunity to live another life. You know, so I am who I am and I'm living my life. You know, but I get an opportunity to be somebody else for the duration that I am on stage, someone who I am not. So I think it gives me another perspective to look at life like that, for me to do justice to that character. And so in the process, I think I also grow, my horizon also widens. So that is what was the basic temptation for me.
Well said. Thank you. My next question is that, you know, from a person who was used to a fixed amount of money coming in every month, whether it was in the Navy or whether it was in the corporate world, you decided to become an entrepreneur or become, you know, transition to a freelance career. What were some of the challenges you faced in transitioning out from the corporate world into a freelance career on your own?
I think self-discipline, I think that becomes the most so. In the armed forces, when I started out, it was you wore the uniform of the day. In boarding school, it was you ate the school, the food that was served to you and not what you wanted.
Yeah.
You know, so everything was because you had to do it, so you did it. You know, here, now there was nobody telling you what to do. And for you to remain productive, you know, there was a lot of self-discipline that was required. You know, so I think that was certainly a challenge that one had to face. But then there was a, you know, payoff also, which was there, that one could do what one wanted and one had that liberty. So I enjoy playing golf. I wanted to do theater, you know, so I got an opportunity to do all that. And while I could work at my own pace. The second thing was, of course, where it was at the point in life where I was. So thanks to the pension that the armed forces gave me, and thanks to my stint in the corporate, where whatever earning I had, I managed to make a decent saving. So it helped me, you know, to have a buffer and to kind of see me through, even if I didn't, you know, make a
correct.
So I guess.
And that's also how, gave you the ability to take risks. So not everyone has the courage to take the risk. And I think you took some risks.
I see it as, you know, in the circus, those trapeze artists are there who keep shifting from one to another.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is always that net underneath, which they know that if they miss it, you know, they'll fall on the net. So I guess these savings and the pension was that kind of net for me to be able to do whatever.
Very well said. So I have time for two more questions. Again, when I was reading about you working with a well-known theater group in Delhi, can you share an interesting anecdote from the time you were performing?
So, you know, we were having these during COVID times, we were, you know, had shifted to Zoom theater. And we were also taking that opportunity to read a lot of plays, because otherwise, under normal circumstances, we didn't have time. And when we were doing the physical plays on stage, so then there was immense amount of rehearsal required. You know, there were things like stage movement. But on screen, we had the benefit that we didn't have to necessarily memorize the lines. We had the script in front of us and we could do that. And as a result, we could handle more plays. So I remember we were doing one of these plays called Three Sisters by Anton Chekhov. And our director, Mr. Faisal Al-Ghazi, so he was there and he played a role. And he played the role of a servant. And it was actually a 30-second role where he made three appearances, which totaled up to 30 seconds. But, you know, so that is where it was a very profound experience for me, because I just realized that firstly, there is no role which is big or small, you know, which is true in whether it's an organization or, you know, anyway. So one should never, ever, you know, look at that, that just the duration of your screen time that you are getting or anything like that, you know. Whatever you get, if you do justice to that, and in fact, the smaller the role, the larger is the room for you to experiment and do things with it, you know, because, so that's one. And second is that every character is extremely important, you know, for, so without that character, the play can't go on. So everyone must respect that both ways when you are doing it, as well as if you may be having a meatier role. So you should not look down upon people in the cast who have got a smaller role. So I had one similar thing in the Navy also when I was commanding the air squadron. So we had pilots, then we had got the navigators, then we had got the maintenance people, you know, and then there were the people who even made breakfast and, you know, served us. So generally there used to be a tendency of the pilots to be the glory boys and, you know, kind of a hierarchy kind of a thing setting in. So we tried to, you know, break that by appreciating, you know, everybody. And in fact, if you go to my squadron there, the stone, foundation stone of the new building, the inaugural thing was done by, and on the stone it is written the names of those two civilian employees who used to work, who used to pack our breakfast and make tea and put it in our this thing, you know. So usually you'll find the name of some admiral or some higher this thing, but their name is there, right, you know, as a so that's, well, I think, what
very,
I learned.
Interesting. Thank you. And my last question to you, you know, you made the move so successfully from the Navy to doing so many different things because your passion drove a lot of your decisions. What would you say are some lessons you would want people who are transitioning out from a structured environment like the military to more creative fields?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is, you know, you always have choice. That's what I would say. And you have a choice of remaining in your comfort zone and remaining with what you are familiar with versus the choice to experiment and try something different and be open to that experience. So I feel that what worked for me was that rather than just relying on what was familiar to me, and leaning on that, which is which tends to be, you know, a natural instinct, because what you're comfortable with, you tend to lean on that. So I like to experiment. And I mean, the very fact that if I've gone on to such fields which had nothing to do with where I started on. So I think that is what would really help, because it helps you to grow, you know, horizon widens, and you know, you get better perspectives. So your decision making becomes better. So that's basically what I feel.
Very interesting.
I think has been the mantra.
Deepak, on that note, and the very interesting comment that, you know, we all have choices to stay in our comfort zone versus whether we want to experiment. And if we do decide to experiment, then again, it's a choice we have to make to be happy in it or unhappy in it. And if you're going to be happy in it, then that is the right way to go and deliver whatever we wanted to set out, whatever we are set out to do. Thank you for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for such amazing stories you gave me about flying from the Andamans with the fuel pump not working. Thank you for talking to me about so many different aspects of what you have achieved in your life, about the varied experiences that you have had and you continue to have. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Thank you very much for having me here. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.